The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and your drinking JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
Save it, save it.
We're going to get to it right off the top. It's the best story of the footballing weekend for any of you who are Canadian football fans, but really just football fans in general. We've got a great story off the top here. BetMGM, by the way, is a place for soccer in Canada, and it presents Footy Prime. We have Amy Walsh here. Hey, Dubs.
Hey, Sharms.
We have Jimmy Brennan here. Jimmy.
Hi.
We have Craig Forrest here. Hey, Craig.
Hello.
How was your weekend?
Not bad.
Could have been better.
Probably could have been better.
Yeah. How was Ipswich this weekend?
Great result.
Ooh. Yeah.
Late goal.
Yeah.
Late goal.
It would have been fun to be part of a watch party that I was invited to. But
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Do tell. you weren't part of the watch party. What's the story? What's the story, Craig?
Well, I had a message. Many people, Ipswich fans would certainly remember Matt Holland.
Legend.
Absolutely. Irish international, legend at Ipswich. Still does some work for Ipswich, a lot of color commentary work as well. So he texted me last week and said there was a message sent to him. He forwarded that to me and said, there's a watch party in Toronto and there's a few Ipswich fans and Ed's already in town. And I'm just sort of reading this and I'm thinking, who the fuck is Ed? Ed's hosting this event. And I'm like, okay. All right. Good for Ed. Well, then Saturday afternoon, after the game is over, somebody says to me, like, oh, I'm going to see Ed Sheeran tonight in Toronto. It's like, Ed Sheeran's in Toronto? Yeah, he's playing three nights. Oh, okay. Fucking penny dropped. And I went back to the message and I'm looking at this Ed thing. And then I look online and there's Ed Sheeran partying with a bunch of Ipswich fans in Toronto. Oh,
that Ed. Oh, Craig.
Craigie. Who the fuck is Ed?
Well, who else could it have been? It could have been Ed the Sock.
Exactly.
Could have been Honest Ed.
Yeah.
There's a few Eds
either
out there.
Either one of those I want to go to a watch party with.
Where the Sock might be maybe? Interesting. Ed Norton would be fun.
Yeah.
Is he still married to Selma Hayek?
No.
Could have brought her. Oh, he's not.
He's
okay,
not. Sorry. He's definitely not.
Okay.
Like, just imagine what your day could have been like. You could have been sitting there with Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
And he's the biggest Ipswich fan in the world, knows you because you're a legend there. And you could have actually been at his concert that night.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably would have said,
yeah, probably stacks. Why don't you come to the concert tonight with me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
not just that. You could have been good mates. This could have opened doors for you.
Oh, I know. Could have been a backup singer if he had any.
He doesn't need them, apparently.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah,
so disappointed. Really kind of disappointed. I would have liked to have met him.
Well, maybe you still can, right? Maybe this will find a way back to Ed.
And next I did text Matt Hall on Saturday afternoon and I said, I had no idea you were talking about Ed Sheeran. And he says, LOL. Next time. I'm like, yeah. Next time.
Next time,
by
never.
One night, right?
Yeah.
And certainly Ed Sheeran isn't there yet. He's huge. He's massive, right? But when you say Ed, the average person doesn't assume you're meaning Ed Sheeran.
No. Right?
No, I agree.
Give me some slack.
We've done this before, right?
I think Ed Sheeran's going to be pretty upset with it all because he's probably thinking Craig Forrest gave me a custard pie.
Maybe Ed showed up because he was told that Craig Forrest would be there.
Oh,
right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I doubt that, but
I don't know, man. You're a name. You're a legend at that club. Yeah.
There's Matty Holland trying to be a good guy. Hey, listen, Ed, I'm going to get Craig Forrest to come over and hang out with you and meet him.
Yeah.
And then he's got to text back and go, yeah, Craig doesn't want to come see you. Because he doesn't know who Ed is.
Craig doesn't even want to go and see his mate, Matt Holland. Right?
Well, he did say come over. He goes, come over to Ipswich and we'll organize something.
You should. Absolutely.
People should start using surnames, right? Like, I mean, if you're going to throw around just the first name, you got to be a huge star, right? Yeah. Like Ed Sheeran, massive star, but I don't know if he's on a first name basis. Back to Forrest's point, who the fuck is Ed?
Oh, well, it could have been a great weekend. Instead, it's just an average weekend for Craig, but that's okay. You got the cool NSL games on Sunday. That was fun. Looking great in studio there, you know? So that, you know, it wasn't a complete write-off this weekend. It was the kickoff of a lot of leagues, though. European season is officially upon us. And for Canadian football fans, pretty exciting weekend. We got some Canadian content, CanCon, as you say in the business, in the Premier League. Liam Miller making his debut, not just making his debut, but being part of Hull beating Manchester United in the first game of the season. Oh, Dubs. For all the United fans out there, and I feel for you, I do. Got to be tough. It's one of the big upsets in opening weekend history, I think. That's massive. I don't know what happened to United, but good for Hull. And when you saw Liam Miller come on the pitch, he looked pretty good as well, actually. I know they've made a lot of signings. I'm hoping he sticks around. There's been no rumors about him leaving, so it seems like he will. And I felt proud. I followed his dad on Instagram, who's extremely proud. Mm-hmm. So, I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, amazing. Go ahead, Forrest.
No, I was just going to say it's an amazing result. And, you know, it's a difficult one for you. You know, I'm not going to make excuses for United, but you have a team that's freshly promoted and you're playing Man United at home in your first game. Like, it's a cup final right out of the gates. Yeah. Like, you're going to get just 100% effort and they're going to make it difficult for you. So, I can understand how that result actually came about, but, you know, unexpected, but still brilliant for the league and good for Hull to get off to a good start. And Ipswich, another promoted team with 3 points at home. So that was good to see.
But to your point, Sharms, about feeling that pride, like his dad is always very effusive in his praise for his kid, and he's a really proud dad. So he's always very public in his feeling. But I think that was all Canadians. Right, like we've got two guys right here who played in the Premier League, but to have Canadian men's national team players actively participating in like the opening of the Premier League season, I know Promise David didn't get his debut, but it just seems like we're at another level, or we found the level that we were at when Jimmy Brennan and Craig Forrest were toiling back in the day. Right, it's meaningful. It really is. So I did feel a sense of pride, and even though he just got a handful of minutes at the end, and I feel like the game was probably decided at that point, like what a feeling that must have been for him to step on the pitch and to say, dream realized, you know, from an 8 or 9 year old kid who had the dreams, the hopes and the aspirations of one day competing in a Premier League, and that's, he can tick that box, right? I mean, listen, a ton of the road left to be traveled, and obviously wants to make his mark, and he wants to compete for more minutes, and he wants to start. So all that is left to be decided. But what an accomplishment to do that, and for Hull to out-muscle, to out-physical, to out-battle Man United, and for them to compete, or to concede, rather, 2 goals off set pieces. And I sent this in our new WhatsApp group. So people will be, I think, very pleased to know that we have yet another one where we can put like little clips and articles of things that we're going to discuss in a Monday show. Jimmy's delighted. But there was one of Harry Maguire handling Brian Mbeumo, defending, I think, a corner kick, not on one of the goals he conceded. But people were like, what is happening? But I think that was a microcosm of their day from United's perspective.
Yeah. You know, you're right, Dubs, about that, you know, with Liam Miller and, you know, it's the road that he's had, and it's never easy. You know, professional sports might seem easy, but it's not. It's really difficult. And you get to that point and you make your debut in the Premier League. And it's like, I remember, like, I mean, obviously the Premier League opening day in 92, I was part of that. And that was more of we talked about this before. It was a name change. We didn't really see at that point, what the Premier League would develop into. But it was like, once you play, you kind of come off and you're like, nobody can ever take that away from you. Like you're there, you've done it. Like you've played at the very, very best. And that was always my goal. International football was brilliant, but playing in the best possible league and that level is really what defines your career, and you can never take that away from him. So hopefully he has a whole bunch more appearances.
You're so right. You work so hard, and especially people don't realize just how difficult it is being a Canadian and working your way and how hard it is to get to that top level. And I think it really kind of dropped for me when I'm standing on a pitch and playing against Liverpool and there's Stevie Gerrard across from me. I'm playing center midfield and I'm like, I'm on the pitch here with Stevie Gerrard. And that was a moment where I went, I can't believe a young guy from Toronto. And all of a sudden I'm standing playing this match against Liverpool right now. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
This is mental.
Yeah, it is. It's special. Yeah, for sure.
So Jimmy, when obviously you grew up in a British family, Scottish family, watched British football.
Scots-Irish.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
It's got it all covered.
Yeah. Went a bit prickly on you.
No, but pricky, maybe. Prickly. Forgive me, Jimmy.
Tracks.
Sorry.
It all tracks.
I mentioned the Scottish part. But, I mean, you obviously grew up... You grew up watching, though, you know, imagine Premier League football, Scottish football, Irish football, of course, obviously. Yeah. But did you have family over for your debut?
No, they couldn't make it then. They were working. That was the hardest part, right? Because they can only come over certain times. You know, my father was working, my mother was working, and my brothers were in school, or well, at the time they were working too. So it was difficult for them to come over. There was only certain periods throughout a year that they could come, and mostly it was around Christmas time. But so, you know, certain games they would have loved to come over, but they ended up watching it.
Yeah, and then they come over at Christmas and they're having a great time, all the celebrations, all the
stuff.
Yeah, right? And you're in training on Christmas Day because you have a game on Boxing Day.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. Wasn't it Deitch had that story about his parents? One of their first games was, no, was it you, Craig? The Millwall game. Was it Millwall? Was it you? Or was it Deitch had a story about his parents, one of their first games experiencing him?
Well, when I was in the youth team, we had a game against Millwall.
Right.
Went down there. It was like, I don't know, 1,000 fans at the most. But they were the most rowdiest 1,000 fans. And my dad actually went down and watched that. And he was just like... blown away. It was like, I couldn't understand why they all wanted to kill you.
Yeah. That was my parents' first game that they came over to was it was the Bristol Derby. And this was probably back in 94, 95. And it was a game that was live on Sky. And it was the big riot where they had the huge pitch invasion. They had the horses on the pitch, that both teams were going at it. They had to cancel the game because of the riots that were going on. And I remember after my mother was like, what is this all of, what is happening? My parents were losing their minds going, this is mental.
This wouldn't happen in Scotland or Ireland.
Oh, of course.
These scummy
Celtic
English.
Rangers.
So I'm going to show my ignorance here and I could just as easily Google it, but I'm sure we have listeners who are asking the same question. What's the Bristol Derby?
The Bristol Derby is Bristol City against Bristol Rovers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's terrible. It's one of the worst. It is bad. They shut the city center down when these matches are on. They just closed absolutely everything. They just
I didn't realize. Was Rovers playing at Bath at that time?
No, they were at... no, they were in town at the time. And then they went to Bath. Yeah.
And then they're back. They bounced back. Yeah.
And then they're back now. But yeah, it was a crazy derby. You can actually see it on YouTube.
You know, I didn't realize it. I got a friend over here, an English guy moved over here, but he's a Bristol City fan. Very happy that I know Jimmy Brennan. Only person that is. But really happy. But he explained to me the rivalry. And I mean, to say that he dislikes Rovers doesn't even come close to it. There's a genuine hatred. It's like, really? I mean, you hear about, you know, the Liverpool, Glasgow, you know, these other great rivalries. You just don't hear so much about Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, because I guess they weren't in the top flight, you know, not in in front of everyone's eyeballs. But yeah, there's a lot of hatred there. Did you see the goal this week by Dom Ballard, by the way, for Bristol City?
Yeah.
If you get a chance, oh my word. Get a chance, dear listener. Have a look. A little flick.
But a little back heel.
Back heel, yeah, back heel flick, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. One of the great goals of the season, and it's day one, well, day two, I guess, for the championship.
Yeah, true that.
Is that going to win the Puskás Award this year?
Maybe. Isn't it great when the Puskás Award is given out to a team that isn't, you know, a sexy team?
Yes.
It's fantastic, and it should be, right? Mm-hmm. I don't care where the goal's scored. If it's a great goal, it's a great goal. Simple as that.
Yeah.
So Liam Miller made his debut. Promise was on the bench for Brighton, but they were smashing Villa 4-0. My, probably outside the whole result, that's the result of the weekend. Good for Brighton. Dan Jeppesen got off the bench for Bournemouth as they take on Man City, look really good for much of that game. And then City at the end, they find a way, as they do, to win 2-1. The big story, though, outside of Dan Jeppesen and the late win, was Erling Haaland and the hair.
The new haircut.
The new haircut. Did you see him making the phone calls to various people?
Yes.
From Noel Gallagher to Ibra. It was brilliant social media bullshit, but I loved it.
it's so part good. Of the mystique, right? And part of what makes him legendary is all of his personality and how he puts it all out there. And I saw the one, I didn't see the Noel Gallagher FaceTime, but I saw a clip that included a FaceTime to Pep. And Pep was, of course, watching football casually. And then Erling Haaland's like, I just wanted to be like you, boss, right? And then he makes the phone call to his best mate in Jack Grealish, and he can't believe it. And he says he looks like he's a 10-year-old again. And he did, because somebody else put up, like, childhood photos of him when he's maybe like 12 or 13 years old. And he does look like a kid again. And then the last one is to Ibrahimovic. And he's like, block me, lose my number. I can't believe you shaved it all off. And then I saw another clip too, where I think Isabella, his partner, calls him cute. And you see instantly like the transformation. You see the on the pitch Erling, right? Where like all of the humor, all of the good nature gets sucked out of the room. And he's like, cute. I look cute. I look terrifying, right? But yeah, what a melon. He can pull anything off, whether it's the undercut, you know, where it's shaved and he's got like the Nordic ponytail, or it's all shaved off. It's an impressive heed.
Well, Ibra told him years ago, apparently, don't cut your hair off because that's where your power is, in the hair.
There we go.
Ibra, of course, renowned for that ponytail and the long hair.
Yeah.
And well, I tell you, if you saw that, I know that, and that, do you see the miss in the first half? It's a goal that he scores 9 times out of 10. I was going to say 10 times out of 10, but I couldn't say it because he missed it. Mm. It was a really bad miss. He should be a diving header or a volley, whatever it was. But hey, first game of the season, we'll give him a break. I think he'll score a few more goals. But that was that. That just, it's funny how football changes, right? And how social media profiles are so important now. And my algorithm was all about Erling Haaland's hair, as opposed to the actual bloody football and the pitch.
Yeah,
I've done something wrong here, I think.
It's not a Samson thing, though. Like, if some people were like, despite the miss, they were like, okay, a 40 goal season loading here. You know, I don't know if he can exceed the form that he was in for Norway at the World Cup, or, you know, what he's done season over season and year over year for City. But to me, he seems like a guy who's surging into his prime. Like, I don't think we've seen the best of Erling Haaland, and that's a very scary prospect. And I don't think the hair has anything to do with it. But I appreciate it, because like you get rid of something that is associated with your lore and your dominance. It takes some balls, takes some guts. So I respect it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting now too, is like, I think with young supporters, they not only or not as much follow teams as they support individuals.
Yes. So true.
So true.
Like people go, oh, I like Barcelona. Oh, like why? But then I like Mbappe and I like Haaland, and it's like, it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, it's just different, but it's
not fine. It sucks. It's awful.
No, it's very much the way women's sports has exploded. and continues its ascent. It's the loyalty towards individual athletes. And as they move from team to team, and obviously if they're playing for their country, that's the country that you support. But you see these fans, and they're not necessarily jumping onto bandwagons, but they're passionate and they're ardent in their support of an individual, the way that they play, but more than that, their own personal brand and their personalities and their characters. So I just think it's a way that you evolve. And I don't think you can, you know, call it trashy or you call it casual and it's like, oh, there's no tradition anymore because people are jumping from bandwagon to bandwagon. I just think it's a different kind of fandom and you need to embrace it as well.
I think it's also very North American, isn't it? And meaning that, you know, if it's the NFL, so many people love New England because of Tom Brady. Tom Brady ends up going to the Bucks, and all of a sudden you saw that New England fan wearing a Bucks jersey now. Or back in the day, Michael Jordan, everybody loved the Bulls because of Michael Jordan. But whereas I think England's different because you grow up with a team that's supported by the family, by everybody that you that supports that team, and you're ingrained in that. Like, you have to support that team. Doesn't matter if
you don't have a choice.
The best player in the world, you're still not supporting Man City. You have to support your local team. But it is very North American. All the kids around here are the exact same, right? They all walk around with their Messi jerseys or Mbappe jerseys.
Well, Messi's a prime example, isn't it? How many Inter Miami fans are there? I see pink shirts everywhere.
Everywhere. Right?
And it's not because they're Inter Miami fans. And the minute he leaves, they won't be supporting Inter Miami, a lot of these guys and girls.
But it's led to a resurgence in full kit numpties. Like the amount of full kit Messi that I see that aren't children, I'm just like, what's happening?
Grown men? I know.
Yeah, grown men.
What are we doing?
On the side of the pitch with full kit on, watching their kid play.
Yeah, where they got hanging out.
Pink socks, pink shorts.
You need to stop that right now, don't you? I mean, listen, if you've got a men's league game after your kid's game, okay, and you're wearing your kit, sure. But that's,
you know,
that's the only
the
time.
Car. Give your head a shake.
And there's no need for shin pads as well when you're watching your kid play.
That is a full kit wanker if you're wearing the shin pads. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Or the goalkeeper gloves.
Handling the kids' snacks out of the cooler. You got the gloves on. Yeah.
And he's asking you to open up his water bottle.
Trying to peel the oranges.
Hey, Craig, are you enjoying Ted Lasso? Are you watching Ted Lasso, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, the news. Now, I'm only like two episodes in, but the whole goalkeeper not wearing gloves storyline's already annoying me a little bit.
Me as well, because I didn't have a problem not wearing gloves. If it was a dry day back in the day, I had no problem not wearing gloves.
Do you have to wear gloves?
I definitely played some games without wearing gloves early on.
Is there a rule? So there's no rule that you have to wear gloves if you're a goalkeeper?
No.
Right. That's interesting, that. So the gloves, though, they obviously protect your hand. I know that. They do provide a bit of
clever
grip.
Clever, Charms.
Huh?
You're pretty clever.
Yeah. Kind of like an oven mitt so you don't get burned.
Oh, okay. I should probably wear that. I'll freaking burn here.
Costanza is the hand model. He wears the oven mitts.
But there's more than that. I mean, the material they use now, and it sticks. It's a bit sticky, right?
It is in dry weather, but when you pull a ball out of the, you know, a brand new ball out of the package and it gets wet and you got a wet surface and now all the pitches are sprinkled before the game. So it's better passing surface. A lot of times there's not an awful lot of grip on it. Like it's not sticky by any stretch. And what was most important for me was the thickness of the palms. Because some of them were really thick, like the Adidas finger saves, all that fucking shit.
Of course, you just keep doing this.
the worst gloves, like they have these spines in the back of it.
You did a feature on that on Sportsnet with Jerry, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, that's right.
I did.
The finger spines.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, because the spines would stop your fingers going back, but... We did have a goalkeeper. I can't remember his name. Big American guy, and he was like Herman Munster. And I can talk.
I know this. You look like next to Kate at the NSL desk.
I'm allergic. He's Herman Munster, And he went to tip the ball over the bar, which he did, and then he got his hands caught on the net on the other side of the bar. So once he came down, three of his four fingers dislocated backwards, and he had those finger saves on, which is just a disaster, and they broke, and the spine went into his finger, and he nearly lost a finger.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was like hanging off the crossbar. Like, it was just a disaster for him.
It's like those horror stories you hear when people are jumping over fences. And so it's like, only have four. Is it Dan Byrne? Is that the story? Big Dan Byrne? And he only has four fingers on one hand and he lost it jumping over. I think so. I might be out of my mind here, but there's definitely a story where somebody jumps over a fence and you've got the barbs at the top and he jumped over with enough speed that his finger caught and it right where your palm meets the base of your finger and it ripped it clean off.
Wait, Dan Byrne was a horse in a horse show, and he jumped over a. He said, "Didn't you say horse show?" He jumped over the gate.
A horror!
Oh, horror! Oh, that makes more sense. I'm envisioning Dan Byrne galloping.
He's like the opposite of a jockey. He's like the exact opposite of a jockey.
No, but I think he's like messing around being the horse or something stupid. I don't know. I'm trying. A horse show. So his finger was degloved?
Or just... Oh my God, I need to find it. I'm so sorry that I brought this up.
No, you're right though. Newcastle United and England defender Dan Byrne is missing the ring finger on his right hand. He lost a digit at the age of 13 when a solid ring he was wearing caught on a spiked fence as he jumped down while showing off for friends, completely tearing the finger off. Oh God.
Well, it's his right hand, so he's okay. He can wear a wedding ring on his left hand.
Yeah, but at 13 though, that's a problem. You know what I'm saying?
He probably didn't have much pace though. He probably didn't have much pace going to the fence. It was probably more of a trot.
Probably. He's got a lot of empathy for a Jordan Henderson at the World Cup, probably.
You're like, hello ladies.
Oh, God. So his body weight severed the finger upon landing. He thought he'd broken his arm because his jacket muffled the feeling and numbness set in. Doctors were unable to reattach the finger. He famously joked later in life about how contactless payment was the greatest invention because he used to drop change through the gap in McDonald's drive-thrus.
That's amazing.
Wow, that's Dubs. I don't know.
God,
some of your information.
A horse show. What a-
Yeah, that's right. Because he would be on the right hand side of the car, so his right hand.
Yeah. He's trying to cling, 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 cling. Because, I mean, if you're going to lose a finger, though, maybe the ring finger is the one to lose.
Yeah, you don't want to lose.
Yeah, you're right.
It's kind of useless. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a nub. It's my ring finger. It's fine.
Server's like, he didn't leave me a tip because he kept dropping the change. But there's the finger just sitting on the table.
You'd be a brave man to make fun of Dan Byrne's finger, though, wouldn't you?
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just like on set pieces, part of the dark arts, just like shove that nub into the back of somebody? A little bony remnant.
Oh, wow. That's the best story you've heard for a while, I think.
Oh, my God. That's funny. I'm like sweating because I was laughing so hard.
That made me laugh.
Okay, where were we? We're talking about football games, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
Yeah. Liverpool. I was talking about depths.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. I think the thinner foam on the fingers was better. I thought they had more feel.
But you played games without gloves early in your career.
Yeah.
Like for who? Like for your age grade
Ipswich
stuff? For Ipswich? Really?
Yeah.
Didn't put stick them on your hands?
Didn't have to. Just give them a good old spit. Put a spit on there and you got a little bit of dirt. Just brought it on.
This is getting so filled. I'm so happy that Wong is not here today.
Oh, yeah.
Because he would not be able to control himself.
Yeah.
It's already off the rails, but it would be right off the rails if Wonger was here.
Hey, Wonger. Hey, JC.
Dirt, spit.
Yeah. Spit.
A little bit of spit never hurt anyone, did it?
Mm-hmm.
Especially catching a ball.
But I love that for us because I had a little bit of an issue with it as well. And I didn't love the third episode. And my daughter, Evie, got angry with me. she's like, Mama, what do you think? Because they'd already seen it and we watched it back again together because I was away. And I was like, no, I didn't enjoy it. And it's really addressing the reality of women's sports teams, especially in England. 50-match or 50-year ban for women. So May, the pub owner, who's just, she can't believe that there's finally going to be a women's team. Like, I think that is reflective of society and people just desperate to support a women's club. A mom who gets on, like, during the tryout, and then she's got a kid, and she gets invited in, and the realities of all that, and coping and supporting a player who's also a mom and wants to pursue that. But I just had such a hard time, and I know that you have to suspend your belief for a little while, and you had to do it for the previous seasons of Ted Lasso as well, for the quality on the pitch. But I just had a really hard time with the quality that was shown and the standard that was shown for the women's football. But I love the fact, Forrest, that you're backing the fact that she's not wearing gloves, because even for me, somebody who played the game and continues to cover the game, I didn't really know that was a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. The show, I think, from that point of view, is like, it just does actually bring out the reality of women's football and the challenges that they have everywhere, you know. And I thought it's very well written. I've really enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, my mom loves it. She's like hooked on it. And I think part of it too, which she loves, is because back when she was growing up, she couldn't play football.
Exactly.
And she was like, I would have loved to play football.
Yeah.
That crazy.
It was illegal, wasn't it? It was like basically
Yep.
Yeah, she was like, we could not play football. We just had to watch.
Yeah.
Crazy. So
they're doing a great job, but Dubs is still not happy. Jesus.
It was just that one episode. I don't know. And like the twins on the team, like that type of like that stupid fighting. I'm just like, what's going on here? But apparently Leah Williamson, and I've seen Jason Sudeikis talk about this, Ted himself, but also an executive producer on the show, that she consulted, you know, just about the reality of showing the hardships of the women's game and what the players have to go through. You saw it with the ACL injuries and how that obviously is a systemic issue in the game, but specifically the women's game, and that she would send voice notes to him that he found super helpful in writing the episodes along with the rest of the writer's room. But oftentimes he was playing her voice notes while they were in that room and they were trying to write out the different episodes and find the narrative and the arc of the season. And it was really helpful, he said, to have that real life experience.
Did you see, I forget his name now, the Mexican player, footballer's life guy, he made his professional debut.
Danny Rojas.
Daniel Rojas.
Yeah, he made his debut this past week. He finally achieved his dream.
And then his sister actually was pulled into the team.
Yeah.
And it gives you an example of that, you know, because he was, you know, in the show, a good footballer, that, oh, she must be a good footballer. Well, no, she never fucking played, but they gave her a shot.
That's right, because of the surname.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Don't study the play on the pitch too closely, Dubs, right?
The men were shite too. The men were shite.
Oh, yeah, they really
That's
were.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, come on, guys. Jesus.
Anyway,
Liverpool, they tied Newcastle at the death there, literally like the last second of the game, a penalty. I thought that Kevin Keegan... Yeah, it was, man, not a fun one to watch. But the Keegan Memorial pre-match was pretty amazing. It really was. Both sets of fans, as you'd expect, just celebrated his life the way it should have been celebrated. I thought it was pretty emotional. And they interviewed a lot of ex-players who were there. And they're all, you can tell there wasn't a dry eye in the house, so to speak. That was pretty amazing. But the game itself, there's some problems for Liverpool. It's going to be a big week, I think, Dubs, because they got to get themselves some players in. Maybe a defensive midfielder might be a good idea, even though they say they're not going
to. I was listening to Michael Owen and Shea Given talk about that, and the two goals that they gave away were on the break, and you have your holding midfielder, like your pivot, and the responsibility that's inherent to that role in shielding and protecting, especially when you're attacking and you're in the attacking third. And he's trying something tricky and intricate on the edge of the 18 when you need to be back and a little bit more responsible and aware of the threat going the other way. You've got Maka who comes on a little bit later. You have some injuries now, and they also talked about the need for more attacking players, but specifically in those fullback positions. So you've got Kirkez on the left, you've got Frimpong on the right. And to hear them talk about, you know, just a couple of years ago when they're one of the best teams in the world, when you've got Andy Robertson, who's now with Spurs, and you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, and two very different players in the pitch balance that they offer, but the work rate and the quality that they're able to replicate, you just don't get that for me specifically with a guy like Kirkez. And you see Elanga, who scored his first Premier League goal. Can you believe that?
That's crazy, isn't it?
I was like, no, that can't be right.
Yeah.
But he has some field and some ground to make up on Kirkez, and then he goes by him, leaves him in his dust, and he's like 10 yards clear of him by the time he puts that ball in the back of the net. So there's something there, and sometimes you can be a little bit sluggish, and Jimmy and Forrest, you guys can certainly speak to this, but I remember as a player, whether it was for club or with the national team, and you're in like extended preparations, which mirrors what you go through your preseason, even though it's, you know, you've got those games here and there, sometimes you have to still shake off a little bit of the rust and the cobwebs when you're moving from hitting all your metrics in preseason to actually playing the game that's in front of you, right? And I think you saw it with Manchester United, certainly, versus Hull City, where it seemed like they never really got into the game. They were really flat. And I think Liverpool was missing a little bit of that spark as well. And Frimpong on the right, I don't know if he's truly a fullback. Like, I think he suits a system where he'd be deployed a little bit higher up. So a week left in this window, and I think Liverpool is definitely gonna have to dip in there and get a couple of players, attacking players, but yeah, maybe look at that pivot position or like a defensive midfielder.
Yeah. I used to hate the first game of the season.
Yeah.
Used to hate it because you knew the tempo was going to be crazy. Your body's still adjusting. You're trying to get your match fitness up because you did all your preseason, which was great, but then getting your match fitness, and it took a few games to finally get to that point where you're like, okay, now I can get through this. And you've seen throughout the Premier League guys cramping after 80 minutes and, mm-hmm. Your body's still adjusting because that first game of the season, the tempo's normally so high that it's not like that during the season, but the first game is always, it's always wild. It's a killer. You're exhausted after that first game.
The like, level I mean, of knackered. Fitness that these players are at, like I remember even just having 2 weeks when you're not doing anything, 3 weeks at the most, and you go back to preseason and you're breathing out your ass. Like it's just... Like at that level, it's just the fitness is insane. That's why it's a young man's sport.
Or one. Yeah.
Brentford seem to enjoy it. Smashing Spurs. Yeah. Brentford. Smashing Spurs 3-0. Yeah. All the money Spurs spent. Brentford look fantastic. They just keep doing it, don't they? They keep doing it.
Yeah. Keith Andrews is doing a good job there.
He is.
I did my pro license with him.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. Good guy.
Yeah. He's, wherever he goes, job. He seems to do a good job there, right? And he's not, because he's not, his name's Keith.
Yeah.
So he's not considered sexy. Yeah. Well, come on, let's be honest.
Wait, the name Keith is inherently unsexy?
Oh, yeah, one of the most unsexy names.
So like if you have a lisp, Keith.
Like Ed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, think about it, Keith. I mean, there aren't that many successful Keiths, are there? Like
is there a famous Keith?
Alexander Keith?
Okay, that's Heath Ledger. It's not Keith Ledger.
Oh.
Oh my God.
Keith Ledger.
That's his brother.
Name me some famous Keiths.
No, I said Alexander Keith, but that's his surname.
Yeah, it's a fine surname. There's got to be a famous Keith. I've got to look it up here. All right, famous Keith. I don't know if there
is a famous Keith Richards.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Is there another
There's
one?
There have to be.
Ooh. Who is the most famous Keith Urban?
Oh, yeah. I mean.
Bit of a stretch.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the hat that the Keiths are hanging their hat on,
No, then Keith's
stuck. It's a visor at best.
Keith Powers is an actor. Keith David is a voice a voice actor. Like, okay, with respect,
JC. Two first names as well. Sorry.
Yeah, not having that. There's very few. Keith Coogan, Keith Ferguson. A lot of voice actors, apparently. your name's Keith.
JC knows them all.
Oh, Keith Flint, Prodigy.
Who's...
You know the Prodigy?
Oh, back the band?
The 90s, yeah. The guy with the green mohawk. He's died. He's dead now, sadly.
Still, though, it's not. They're not very popular Keiths, are they?
I know.
No.
Who the fuck is Keith?
I mean, there's more famous Garys than Keiths, isn't there?
Yeah.
For sure, especially in football.
Yeah.
So, Keith Olbermann is in North American sports.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
We're dredging. Sorry, Keith. Any Keiths out there listening, I do apologize. It's not a bad name. I quite like the name, in fact. But
you can't do that now.
I don't dislike the name. I'm just saying it's not that many people that who have achieved very much in their life.
It's just not a strong name.
They haven't achieved much.
There's not a lot of famous Craigs either. Craig.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's probably more Craigs.
I don't know. Craig David, I guess.
Craig David, isn't he? Wasn't he arrested? Isn't he? He's got a bit of a problem, isn't he? I think.
Does he?
Maybe not. I don't know. I could be wrong. Anyway,
does he have all his fingers?
Yeah. So other games. So Jimmy Forrest. They started off with a loss.
Yeah, brutal. They did all right as well. They had a couple of chances. Jesus had a couple of good headers, but just couldn't get on target. End up losing against Leeds 1-0 at home, which was not a good result for us. That's for sure.
First game of the year, you know.
And Liverpool, by the way, next.
Yeah.
And Liverpool.
I didn't mention it. I should have mentioned it with Canadians. Nico Gagnon, Bournemouth set piece coach. Looking pretty good there until they score from a set piece. But still, good for Nico to get back in the Prem because we discussed it. We spoke to him about it, actually. He thought he'd be back this past year, I think, but there were visa issues. In the Prem, couldn't get there, but he's back there, so it's good for him.
Chris, quick word on, say, Nico Gagnon, but set piece coaches as a rule. You get the plaudits and you get the critics after you when your team is successful or unsuccessful on attacking set pieces. And we know that includes like the ugly stepsister as throw-ins, right? Because the long throw is more and more important when you're looking at dead ball situations and restarts. But they don't really get clapped up when the team is very good, very organized, and excellent in executing defensive set pieces. Do you notice that? That the emphasis is very much on offense and what you're producing and how many goals scored and conversions you have.
I spoke to Nico about that very thing when I interviewed him whenever it was last year or so. And he goes, he takes such pride from that. Defensive set pieces as much as you know, attacking set pieces. Does it count? Would a goal kick, do they consider that? Does a set piece coach get involved in goal kick strategy, do you think?
No.
I don't think so. That's more build up.
Yeah.
Because I know in that game, the Bournemouth game, they scored that goal from the goal kick, right? And I thought, I wonder if Nico had his fingerprints on that. It was a great goal. The way they moved it around.
I wouldn't think so.
No? Okay. Take it back, Nico. Anyway, good for you to get back in the Prem.
That's Keith's job. Yeah. Under his umbrella.
We have got Fulham playing Chelsea today, and Luke de Fischerol is in the, I believe, in the matchday squad.
Ooh.
Last week he was part of the first team squad. Again, much can still happen between now and the window closing, but who knows? Can you imagine we see Luke get some minutes today? Fantastic. Could be a brilliant weekend.
It'd be nice if they kept him around.
Yeah.
But at what expense, though? It would be at his expense because they keep him around. How many minutes does he actually get, right? Like, does he not need to go out on loan somewhere, even though it would be nice to see him stay with Fulham?
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying that on the back of him getting time and playing time because I think he can do a good job. But you're right. If he's not going to play regularly, it might be best for him to go out on loan again. But they don't always do what's best for the player. I mean, they might do it best for the club. And if they think that we need to keep him around for cover, he could end up sitting the majority of the season without actually getting a lot of playing time in the first team. Because that would be beneficial to the club.
we'll get to MLS shortly. I want to just quickly, the Supporters Club came through for us with some great headlines.
Oh.
Some headlines to expect in May from the Prem. Rice, baby. Midfield dominance leads Arsenal to their second title. Pretty good. Sweet dreams are made of Reese. James scores a late winner. Chelsea wins the league.
More like broken dreams because he'll be injured again coming up soon.
Yeah, no kidding. Canadians are invading the Premier League and bringing their A game.
I like that.
Oh. That's pretty good too. Pretty good.
Very
too.
Good.
Good. Yeah, we got a bunch. I like this one actually. Where is it? Sheikh Mansour files for bankruptcy, causing Man City to finish 17th with all the charges. Did you see the story this weekend that the United Arab Emirates are putting some pressure on the UK government saying, if these findings, this court case, doesn't go City's way, then that could cause some internal issues in our relationship between the two countries.
Jeez, I hope that's not true.
Settle down.
Yeah. Come I mean, on. It's an independent group, but I mean, there's 115 charges and, yeah, you wonder what's going on behind the scenes because, I mean, if they're found guilty, what do they do with all their titles?
Well, that's the thing, right? Gone. Like Juventus, all those years. I mean, that was match fixing. Different level. But Chelsea had a lot of charges, right? And they got a big fine. They didn't lose any points or anything, right? So I think City are really kind of looking at that as saying, listen, you want to punish us? Sure, give us a fine, but don't strip us of titles or points.
Yeah, but what's the deterrence? I mean, the money's not an issue. They're going to just pay that. I think that what they could do that would actually make a difference to stop this from going on would be to put them in the fourth tier.
It would be a deterrent to do that for sure.
You know, you basically cheated for titles and took advantage of this so-called revenue they weren't meeting to win titles. I mean, you have to, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I agree with you because there has been the precedent, like Sharms, you referenced Chelsea in the Abramovich era, and then they just got fined. But there more recently have been huge point sanctions and sporting sanctions. What, for Everton, right? When Dyche was in
Leicester, Everton.
Leicester, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's still apples to oranges in terms of, mm-hmm. of how many sanctions and 115 charges. But to me, it has to be sporting as well as a monetary fine. It has to be.
Yeah.
Well, look at me in Southampton, right? That wasn't anything like this. It wasn't financial irregularities, but they got punished heavily for just spying on the opponents.
Yeah.
Right, last year, right?
Carl Laren got deducted. Forrest got deducted points, remember?
That's right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Under Steve Cooper, right?
Yeah. Happens everywhere.
Carl Laren, by the way, scored this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's playing really, really well. Quickly, I know you got to leave soon, Jimmy, and we'll wrap the show quickly. But MLS, TFC beat Miami. Dane St. Clair, speaking of hair, no longer with the bleach blonde on top. Got the start, though. Yeah. But TFC picking up more points despite this injury bug, to say the very least, coming through that team.
Yeah, 7 points in the last three games. They're looking good. And I think everybody knows that was going to be a tough match going to Miami away. And it was a great performance. Really was a good performance all over the park. Etienne getting his goal, Sargent scoring as well. It really was a team performance, and they deserved the result. That's for sure. And then obviously Messi scoring, in the 81st minute, and then mm-hmm. panic mode starts setting in. You're thinking, oh my God, they're going to throw everything at us, but they held off. Yeah. So great result.
Mm-hmm.
Miami don't like defending, do they? Vancouver won. Montreal drew as well. So not a bad weekend for the Canadian teams, all things considered. Marcus Caldera scored his first professional goal for Minnesota, Canadian boy, from Mississauga.
Nice.
I noticed. Yeah. So we have some more talent coming through the ranks there. All right. Anything else you want to get to? You're dying to get to. Jimmy, if you got a jump, you go right ahead.
Yeah.
I got a buddy. Let's see you, mate.
Hi, Jimmy.
Anything else you guys want to touch on?
NSL. I think you saw Vancouver really, they're going to start to go on a heater here, the same as they did last year, where they went on an 8-match unbeaten run around this time in August, where they kind of climbed themselves out of the basement of NSL. They were never at the bottom. Last year it was the Tides. This year it's the Calgary Wild, but Calgary's looking really good. They were able to get a point on the game that Forrest was on there. Jorian Bauckham with a hell of an individual effort there. And Montreal still can't seem to come up with a win at home. But the game that I was on the Saturday night game where it was Vancouver visiting top of the table, Ottawa Rapid, and they opened them up. They'd never conceded more than 4 goals, which they did last weekend to the Calgary Wild. So Calgary Wild's on a little bit of a run themselves. But Vancouver Whitecaps with still tons of players out injured. Chantal Swaby, their Jamaican international, the new signing, she still is getting up to full fitness, and they won 5-1. So Ottawa reeling at the moment. And then the other match that I was on was the Halifax Tides at home, shit weather. The field was really sticky. You know, sometimes you see grass fields run really slick, and you saw that with the first goal that was conceded by Annika Tove that was shot by Nikki Small about 20 yards out. That was right at her, but it pitched right before it got to the goalkeeper and it kind of squeaked in. But then the rest of the game, the ball almost seemed to be getting stuck underneath them, and the Tides couldn't find any fluidity or fluency going forward. And so they lost 2-0. But yeah, for me, the big story was the way that Vancouver, and led by DeFilippo, who's on 9 goals now, Elise Bennett of the Roses is on 10 goals now to lead the Golden Boot race. But DeFilippo gets 2 assists in that game where they won 5-1, and the scoring was shared. And Alex Lamotang, who's a new signing for them as well, scored an injury time for the first half, added another 13 seconds into the second, and then assisted again a couple minutes later to Anna Bout. So 3 goal contributions within the span of 3 or 4 minutes. So it was an exciting game to call.
Who do you think, Dubs, in that league? I believe only Ottawa has a winning record at home in the whole league. Everybody else has a losing record. What do you think that's down to? Is it just the not defending the transition and being having to be on the front foot more at home and taking the initiative to the other team and leaving openings? Because it does seem very strange that they're having trouble. Vancouver, you know, having lots of trouble at home.
Yeah.
But on the road, these teams seem to do quite well. Can you put a finger on that?
No, I'm not sure what to make of it. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there with defensive transition being an issue for a lot of these teams, where they play a more expansive, dominant possession style, which leaves them exposed on the break. But Vancouver, like I said, 2-match kind of win streak now, but they go back home for a 4-game homestand. So they're going to have to sort that out. And I think you might see by the end of the season that the home and away records for all the teams will kind of come back to the middle. But you're right. At this point, they're all 6 teams are much better sides away.
Mm-hmm.
Calgary is not much better. Surely. Wow. Minus 28 goal differential.
Yeah, but they're
so
a different
much better
team.
Lately. Yep.
They're a different team. They had their first, the Canadian championship, they win there, okay, against an opposition that's not the same level, fine, but it gave them some confidence. They go to Vancouver, I believe they took the lead, then they went 2-1 down, and it didn't look likely. In the 90th minute, Bauckham scores, gets one flicked against her nose and ends up in the back of the net.
Yeah, she scores with her face, yeah.
And then Stewart, in the 95th minute, wins the first game for Calgary of the season on the road against Vancouver.
Yeah, it took them 14 games to finally win one in league play.
Yeah, and then they go beat Ottawa.
Ottawa, yeah.
Who is top of the league, and then they draw in Montreal. So they're a completely different looking team, more organized. They're still conceding too many chances and goals, but that Canadian championship, they've got to have that on their radar, because the league doesn't look likely that they could possibly make the playoffs because they're too far behind. But if they're playing that well and you go into the Canadian championship and it's another lease of life for them, they could do something.
They just needed that extra time, find the rhythm, get their feet underneath them, play a weaker opponent, and all of a sudden their chests were a little bit puffed out and they were feeling it. They were playing a real kind of brand of football where they looked like themselves. There was an understanding about what they wanted to do, and there was the belief. And sometimes that's the intangible that you need to get back on track.
Yeah, and they're not so fragile, because even when they went down to Montreal, they come back and welcome with that fantastic individual goal from our own half. cuts in on her right foot, puts it back past Karpenko, who's in top form for Montreal as a goalkeeper. So yeah, it's good to see. I like I like that.
CPL, the top four teams really separate themselves from the rest right now. Vancouver in fourth, 27 points. In fifth is the Wanderers and 20 points. Ottawa is a team that, you know, you talk about teams late in the season kind of finding themselves. Watch out for Ottawa. It's Calgary and it's Forge. I mean, they're the top two teams points-wise so far this season, the two big favorites. But something about Ottawa under the new manager, some resilience there. So that's one to watch as well. Before we leave, I want to mention Gianni Infantino showed up for this CONCACAF meeting and for this U15 tournament, despite Vito Montaliani asking him not to attend.
Yeah.
Still attended. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. And he's come out today with an interview, and he's talking about how, you know, his goal has always been to close the gap between the haves and have-nots. Yeah. And that's why he's doing what he's doing. He's just trying to clamor for those small nations' support, because one vote, one country, right? Simple as that. It's all quite seedy and transparent. Clearly, you know what he's doing here. But he's sticking around, and money does talk. Mm-hmm. But it's all kind of gross, isn't it?
It is. That's a good way to describe it. It's it's pretty disgusting. And I think there was a run-in, I'm not sure where it was, that I saw on Instagram between he and Ronaldo. And there's like a still after Ronaldo kind of shakes his hand and they have like a quick conversation. Ronaldo looks shell-shocked after. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe I had to do that.
Yeah, exactly. What can he do? What's he supposed to do, right?
Mm-hmm. You're in a real very difficult position.
Yeah. I mean, with Infantino now coming public again and talking, there's going to be some response to that, I'm sure, from UEFA and whoever else is going to be, but we'll cover it as best we can.
The Nordic countries put out a statement, right, to say that they stand strong in solidarity against Infantino continuing as president. Mm-hmm. So I imagine those will continue as well, and then Infantino will continue to cultivate support with the quote-unquote have-nots.
Hey, what do you make of this whole talk about CONCACAF and UEFA joining forces for a Nations League tournament? I actually like this one. Right, Nations League is, you know, so Canada's playing Panama again. Oh, they're playing Honduras again. Okay, boring, right? Let's throw them together, Craig. Yeah, you don't seem too interested. You're too happy about that.
It's just all these different competitions. But I think from a development standpoint, I think it's good, because playing against European opposition will, you know, help your development and help the development overall in CONCACAF, I think. It'll push teams. So from that standpoint, I think it's good. And, you know, they try to get away from the friendlies and create something around, you know, games that were meaningless before and give some emphasis to them. And there is some emphasis to them. I mean, look at Sweden. They didn't win a game in a single game in qualifying for World Cup, but they did well in Nations League, got into a playoff and ended up at the World Cup. So they're trying to make it more important and put some emphasis on it. So there is that, but there's just so many competitions. Like, it's just.
Can you see a England or a Germany flying over to Toronto to play a Nations League game, though? Really? I know there's going to be tears, and to start with, that wouldn't happen. But promotion relegation in Nations League could potentially happen. I mean, I'd love to see it, obviously, but for those international windows, you want to try and keep the travel down. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. The clubs wouldn't be too happy with that, you know.
No, but it does seem that UEFA and CONCACAF are pretty tight right now.
Well, this is trying to leverage the power, right, in the optics of these two powerhouses working together.
There's 41 teams, is it, Dubs, in CONCACAF? I think it's 41, or is it 43? Anyway, there's 41, a lot of teams.
41, yeah.
Yeah, 41, they wield a lot of power.
35 can vote, I believe.
Is that what it is? Okay.
And 55 in UEFA, correct?
Correct.
Do Nevis and St. Kitts get two votes?
They should.
They should. By all rights. All right. Listen, that's it for today's show, unless you want to get to anything else.
No, that was fun.
Yep. Okay, good.
Just a quick comment on our Dan Byrne story. Has he ever appeared on The Simpsons? Because that would be the perfect crossover for somebody with only four fingers.
It would, wouldn't it? Yeah. Why can't cartoonists draw thumbs? Is it that difficult?
I don't think it's that. I think
no,
it's
it is.
Just...
All cartoons are four
Stop.
Fingers. No, seriously, it's a thing.
Really?
Yes, it's a thing.
But I don't think it's because it's limiting artistically. Like, they can't quite achieve the realism that they're seeking out, is it?
Yeah, it's by design.
Yeah.
They're going to find this out, aren't they, right now? Okay.
Artists.
We've gone on some tangents today.
Why do cartoon characters have four fingers only? I guess we all have four fingers, right? But okay, let's
Sometimes
see.
Sometimes three.
Yeah.
In some cases. A lot of classic cartoon characters have four fingers in each hand. It's mainly an animation convention because four fingers are simpler and quicker to draw. Mickey Mouse, four fingers. The Simpsons, four fingers. SpongeBob SquarePants, four fingers. Bugs Bunny, four fingers. Donald Duck, four fingers. Tom and Jerry, generally four fingers. The Flintstones, four fingers. Family Guy characters, four fingers. Looney Tunes characters, commonly four fingers. Boom.
And burn, four fingers.
That's a thing. He's a caricature. Oh, all right, God. We should really go. We should definitely go now. Mm-hmm. Dubs, broadcast this week?
Yes, on Thursday, we are going to have a special guest. I'm not sure if that's still embargoed, so I'm not going to say anything. But yes, special guest on Thursday. So a later than usual broadcast this week. We'll have a guest on, we'll have an interview, and then we'll have a wrap of week 18 action in NSL.
Okay, great. I am going to be sending out some texts after this podcast to our MLS favorites to have a little roundtable MLS chat from Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto because the supporters club won it and it's good timing, I think.
And perhaps a Wall of Fame guest as well.
Yeah, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Could be. Yes. All right. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Like and subscribe and send us your comments. We'll see you next time. Cheers for listening.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeig and on Twitter at @footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Why with the sultry exit?
I don't know. Even just saying that we're named Dan Byrne.
I don't hate it.